give to Jesus during his time of temptation, where he says, here, come and worship me and I will give you all the kingdoms of the world. And Jesus said, forget about it. You shall worship the Lord your God. Him only shall you serve. But this one takes up the offer. He worships Satan, and he is given the kingdoms of the world. The promise that was tendered foolishly, of course, to Jesus during his temptation. This one takes up the challenge. Antichrist, one who is against Christ, who will profane the name of Christ, who will blaspheme the name of Christ, who will try to exterminate those who name the name of Christ during the time of the Great Tribulation, who will do everything in his power to destroy the name of the Messiah, and who will set himself up as the Messiah in place of Christ. He's against the true Messiah, and he sets himself up as a substitute Messiah, anti-Christos, in the place of the Christ. We come to chapter 13, where we begin the introduction to the Antichrist, the chief henchman, the dictator of the second of this time called the Tribulation. And I stood on the sand of the sea. Stop. There are different translations of this early first sentence at chapter 13 and verse 1. The best, meaning the latest, the ones that are considered the most reliable documents, say not, I stood, which is John speaking, I stood on the sand of the sea, but he stood on the sand of the sea. And if you take that translation as the preferred translation, that means it's Satan who is planning to vent his wrath in the way that we've just described, is now about to summon up his chief henchman, standing at the edge of the sea, and that his chief henchman comes out of the sea, if you will, as a result of Satan standing on the edge of the sea and summoning him up. That is one image, if the translation is properly, he stood on the sand of the seashore.
But now American standards say the dragon.
Right. That's the preferred translation because it matches the more reliable and the more ancient texts. But if you go with the authorized version, and there's some who still do, and which this New King James Version that I'm reading from also depends upon, John's own testimony is saying, I observed this. And actually both could be true. Because after all, to say that he stood on the sand of the seashore is a testimony on the part of somebody who's observing. So he saw the dragon. It would still be John's testimony. Whether he's the one who sees the beast or he sees Satan kind of on the periphery summoning him up. In either case, John is bearing witness of the same events. And I, or he, stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw, I, John, so his testimony is still there, saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns. And here we certainly have imagery. Another beast is described earlier, of course, in chapter 12, the great fiery red dragon having seven heads and ten horns. That's found in chapter 12 and verse 3. If you will, there's the beast from the pit. That's referring to Satan. Here we have the beast out of the sea. And what we're going to have coming up a little later in chapter 13 is the beast out of the earth. The beast out of the pit, Satan. The beast out of the sea, which would be, of course, the Antichrist. And the beast out of the earth, which would be the false prophet. Now, some have called this the unholy trinity. I want to correct that. There's only one trinity. Three in one. One being expressed in three persons. What you have is a tritheism, if you want to give it any title whatsoever. Three who try to proclaim Satan as God. But they're three different beings. They're not three persons in one being. So I hesitate to use that word Trinity unless you put it in quote marks. And I saw a beast rising up out of the sea. The phrase rising up out of the sea is a phrase which in the Old Testament generally refers to Gentile nations and leadership. That the land, Eretz Israel, is the land of Israel. But the sea, the great sea, is outside of the land, and that's viewed as being the source from which the Gentiles came from who invaded the land. So here we have the first introduction to the Antichrist as being a Gentile. That he comes out of the sea. At least that is the supposition on the part of most scholars. I saw a beast arising up out of the sea, having the same description we just saw of the red dragon. In 12:3, having seven heads and ten horns, and on his horns ten crowns, and on the heads a and on each of his heads a blasphemous name, something that is contradictory to who Jesus is or who God is, that insults him in some way or other. Blasphemous. This is both the image of we're probably pretty used because of special effects these days and watching horror movies. I don't know if any of you watch horror movies, of seeing all kinds of weirdo beasties. And they have these, because of the increasing talent of special effects people, they have these horrible things that you see in the representations. Well, here we have a scary image of a beast coming out of the sea with seven heads and with ten horns. Same image that we saw with regard to Satan in 12:3. What does that mean? Seven heads and ten horns. Beg pardon? Well, there is no other answer other than there is apparently going to be a confederation or confederacy during the time of the Great Tribulation in which the one who is called the beast out of the sea or the Antichrist will lead a confederacy of ten nations. So the difference is that the seven are consecutive empires, whereas the ten are concurrent or simultaneous kingdoms or states that confederate with the Antichrist. So we have a preceding set of empires, one after another, over history that have arisen and have tried to rule the whole world. And it's interesting to see who the candidates might be for these seven empires. And I'll give you the names that are proffered most often. But then finally you come to the final empire, which is the empire of the Antichrist, what's called sometimes the revived Roman Empire. We'll talk about why it's called that a little bit later on. But that during this time period, it isn't that the Antichrist runs the government and has a single government with a single national army. He has ten nations that confederate together, and he is the leader of that confederacy. So that's the ten horns. And on the horns, ten crowns, the diadems. They're not the crowns of victory as in a race. Laurel wreaths, but these are crowns, bejeweled and golden crowns, which are the sign of rulership. So we have ten heads of state or ten states, ten sovereign states, that confederate with the beast, and so he's carrying them, meaning he's ruling over them. Now, who are these seven empires? Yes. Yes. Yes, it's sometimes called the Revived Roman Empire, and we're going to look at some Old Testament passages that provide the background or the basis for that assumption, for that designation, I should say. Yes. Some people have called it the European Union as the best candidate for the Confederacy, but there are more than 10 states. So it may very well be that only 10 out of the Confederacy, out of the European Union, line up, and it may be that that's enough to be able to rule the world. Yes. Not directly. The only way that the United States could be involved would be through some kind of an alliance, in which either the European Union takes over the place of ascendancy. We have the century of Britain, and they have the century where they were the biggest power, and they have the century of the United States, which is generally considered the 20th century, is the century of the United States, where it was in the ascendancy and kind of had the most sway over the world. Maybe there will be a century of the European Union, or a decade of the European Union, whatever you want to call it, in which they will suddenly come into ascendancy. I don't know if you follow world news and follow the attitudes on the part of some of the leadership of certain of the European Union nations, particularly France and Germany, but you probably, if you're following the news, see them as not being friendly, as if you will, resisting the United States and the United States policies. Now, we still have a staunch ally in Britain, thank goodness, but we don't have the same kind of NATO solidarity that we enjoyed in prior times when communism seemed to be the common enemy that everybody rallied to oppose. We have now a group of nations that say, hey, we're going to go march according to the tune of our own drummer, thank you. And it's not the same drummer as that which is leading the United States. And there's a hatred almost that is erupting around the world on the part of other nations that formerly were allies and friends against the United States. It is always the case, and throughout history, that whatever nation was in the ascendancy, was, if you will, the dominant nation of the world, will be envied and hated and resented on the part of those who do not have that much power. That's a common and natural kind of reaction on the part of people, because people are not satisfied with seeing others gain power. And so they're going to oppose that power. So that's the kind of phenomenon that we're beginning to see as the United States continues its domination as the one remaining superpower in the world. Continuing opposition on the part of others who, as a confederacy, as the European Union, are now seeking their own place in the sun. And to not be under the shadow any longer, or simply following lockstep according to the policies of the United States. So if this is true, and this is all supposition, this is all speculation, this is not something that anybody can say, this is what will happen. I want to make it crystal clear. This is not saying this is what will happen, but I'm simply saying it fits. The king of the north, directly north of Israel, is, of course, Europe. And so we're going to see that as being, if you will, the likely location, a locale from which the Antichrist will come. We're going to have to stop. When we come to the discussion of Armageddon, and particularly when we realize that the Euphrates is supposed to be dried up to make room for the hordes to come in from the east, it may very well be that alliances like the Axis of World War II will come into being, where maybe the United States will be involved on one side and maybe some other nations will be involved on another side, and we'll see what happens. We don't know what precisely is going to happen. But clearly there is probably going to be that kind of influence if you follow those references to those coming in from the east. We'll talk about that later. Let's go to the Lord in a time of prayer. Heavenly Father, we are thankful that those...